They recommended that we provide birth families and adopted families with the support to negotiate and maintain openness when it is in the best interests of the child. This is not in the legislation either. In fact, the legislation goes so far as to say if you don't file within 30 days or if you can't find birth parents, then the time is closed. And I don't think that's in the best interests of a child who forever will wonder why their parents have given up on them, or will forever wonder why their parents cannot come around anymore. And that would be a traumatic and horrible experience, which would, in some cases, start that downward spiral. The committee also recommended that we support families throughout the public adoption process and help families up after the adoption is finalized. This is on page 44. And this would involve the commitment of this and future governments to give some money to ease that transition. It would be far cheaper, I would put to all of you, to give the money or a portion of the money that is being spent through the CAS, through the Crown Ward, through the foster system, to the new family, to make the transition possible, to make the child secure and happy, than to continue the situation the way it is. And if the money is going to be spent anyway, I think it's far better to spend it within the confines of the family so that the child can truly be helped in a loving and nurturing way than to give it to a government agency as good, as well-meaning and as competent as the CAS. In my view, the family would be the appropriate institution to receive the money, but there is nothing within the body of the bill or any commitment made by this government to spend the money in a way other than you're spending it now. There is, and there will continue to be, serious problems in terms of finding enough families to be adoptive parents. And as I said, and I've already said, there's 7,000 people and only 1,500 families. The report went on to state, and I quote again from it, quote, and this is a long quote, Madam Speaker, "And we repeatedly heard from families pursuing public adoption that instead of being treated as a valued resource for waiting children, agencies work to screen them out of, rather than into, the adoption process. Many families told us that they were not welcomed nor provided with the opportunity to explore whether or not public adoption was the right choice for them. This approach could be due to a lack of resources within CASs to embrace all prospective adoptive families, and it could also be because many families initially inquire about adopting healthy infants. Some CASs told us that, at first contact with prospective adoptive families, they try to describe the realities of the needs of many of the children in their care. This may well have the unintended result of scaring off families calling about healthy infants, but who, with more complete information, might be more than willing to adopt a toddler, an older child, or a child with special needs. The screening out approach might be a natural outcome of child protection orientation. Approaching adoption using a child protection lens is completely understandable given how much child protection work CASs are engaged in on a daily basis." That's found on page 46 of the expert panel report. But again, Madam Speaker, none of this found its way into this bill. None of it. And the expert panel went on to state again, and again I quote from them, quote, "Despite this trend of openness in adoption, we learn that openness and how it may be implemented is not yet widely understood by some adoption workers and many adoptive families. We have heard that many CASs find the current tools, including openness orders and agreements, to be very complex, so complex, in fact, that some have established a policy not to use them." Perhaps, and this is my aside, perhaps that's why nothing has really changed since 2006. And I go on. The complicated tools, coupled with concern about safety for children and fears about how open this may infringe on the right to parent, make some CASs and adoptive families reluctant to consider openness in public adoptions. Children's aid societies are already struggling to stay afloat. My colleague from Dufferin-Caledon spoke about many of those societies, spoke about the financial insecurity that many of them have had in the past year as their funds dwindled at the time of the end of year allocation, so that they had to seriously look at laying people off. They are expected to do an enormous job and increasing complexity. They are given additional responsibilities by the government without the funds to go along with them. Children's aid societies are struggling today to stay afloat, and only 2% of their resources are being spent on adoptions. If this bill goes through, and they are going to have to start looking into more and more adoptions, if they are going to have to start increasing the number of adoptions or potential adoptors from 1,500 to 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000, then where are they going to get the funds from? How are they going to accomplish this goal? If it is the intent of the government, and it would be a laudable attempt, is if they were successful in getting this money, if they were successful in getting children adopted, maybe they wouldn't need as much money. Maybe the money could be given to the families. Maybe that's what needs to happen here. But I haven't heard it, either from the parliamentary assistant or the government house leader when they spoke. That's why we need this to go to committee. This is why we need to have this discussion. Is this bill going to help, or is it going to hinder? Is it going to make it more difficult for CASs to find adoptive places for people? Are they going to have the resources? And then, if it happens, where are those resources going to end up? If the CAS doesn't need them, I think it would be very laudable that the family got them. If the CAS continues to need them, are there additional funds for what can only be said to be one of the most worthwhile goals that we could undertake? That's a legitimate question to be asked. With the new provisions in Bill 179 that will require a new process for terminating access orders and creating openness orders, what does this mean for CAS resources? I do know that a good deal of the money that was spent by the Children's Aid Society of Toronto when I was a member of it for some 8 years, back in the 1990s and up until I came to this place in 2003, far too much of the money that they had was spent on legal advice. And I understand that this is a complex process, that lawyers were constantly involved, that the courts were a remedy that had to be resourced all of the time, that people were running back and forth, the families who were potential adoptees sometimes, the birth families for sure, the official guardian for the children, the Children's Aid Society itself. This was a hugely complex and expensive proposition. We need to know if this bill is going to require new processes for terminating access and creating openness orders, what, if anything, is going to be resourced to Children's Aid Societies to do it? It could be that they need less money. I don't know. But I do need to hear about this, and we have not yet heard about this from anyone. A very real issue that I want to spend some time on here is the whole issue of subsidy. I've touched on it a couple of times, but this is what the expert panel had to say about this, and it's important to read it all. It's from page 55 of their report. Quote, "A second issue related to placement success in many public adoptions concerns adoption subsidies. As the child welfare system is currently structured, most children with special needs receive substantial additional financial support to address those needs while they are in care. This support may be cut off, however, if the child is adopted. we heard from some very dedicated foster parents who said they would like to adopt children currently living in their homes, but primarily due to the significant needs of the children, simply could not afford to do so. Others worried that adoption was not in the best interests of a child if it resulted in a loss of critical services and supports. Perversely, as the system is currently structured, a child with special needs has a better chance of having those needs met by remaining in care, a solution that overlooks their basic human need for permanency and emotional attachment, and the province's own need for fiscal responsibility. Simply put, it costs more to keep children with special needs in care than it does to provide adoption subsidies for these children. That's what we want to hear. That's what we want this government to say. The budget was passed a couple of weeks ago, but there was nothing in the budget, I guess because the bill is not yet law, that would state how the government intends to move in this very vital sector. But within a billion-dollar budget, I'm sure that there's monies that are not accounted for, at least for which I cannot account, that the government could draw on if that is their intent. I hope it's their intent. And if it is, I'd like to hear that when it comes to committee. The issue of subsidies was one of the very primary concerns raised by adoption advocates, nearly all of them, who came before the special committee. We have a perverse incentive in the system, as they said, that if you are a foster parent, you have access to funding that will ensure the child in care has access to the services they need. But once you decide to do a wonderful thing, to bring that child into your family, to forever say that they are yours and that you love them and they are part of your family, then you lose that access. Does this make sense? It is an impossible situation for most people. And we want to know what's happening with this before we give our seal of approval. Could be the government's got this all planned out. I hope they do. There is no moral justification, though, I would say, for it, and it makes terrible financial sense. The minister has hinted at a discussion with children's aid societies that this issue of subsidies will be discussed. But we don't know, and we want to know. And I think the children's aid societies need to know, and the people of Ontario will demand that right. They are the wards. They are our children. They are not anyone else's children. When they are wards of the state, they are our children. And we have a responsibility to do what is best for them. We know what this government has done in other similar circumstances, which does not bode well. My colleague, the member from Hamilton East Stoney Creek, who's occasionally quite loud in this chamber, was never more diligent than he worked tirelessly to protect the temporary care assistance that grandparents were supposed to receive when they looked after their children so that the children did not become wards of the state. And I remember all of those grandparents coming here. I remember the demonstrations in front of this building. I remember them coming in to the legislature and sitting in the public galleries. I remember the dismay that they had because the few tiny dollars that they were being given to look after their own grandchildren were being taken away by the system. And the system was indeed perverse. For 3 years, my colleague Mr. Miller has been working with the grandparents to fix the definition of temporary. Temporary, the government has determined in its wisdom, means for a very small period of time. The courts and the tribunals have determined it to mean something else. In fact, the two cases that have made it through all of the courts and tribunal system has found against the government. The two cases have said that temporary is not just for a short period of time, but temporary can be defined that until such times as the children might be normally expected to return to their own parents or perhaps to become wards of the state. And these grandparents are subsisting on very little. And they were getting, I think, one case, $241 a month in order to look after all of the needs of a child who they had assumed, for all intents and purposes, they were the guardian and looking after them. And the government fought them every single step of the way. Rather than say this is a good thing so that they didn't become wards of the state, rather than say it's a good thing so they didn't go into the chair of the care of the Children's Aid Society or end up in a group home, they denied the grandparents who were willing to look after them, grandparents of very modest and meager means, the $241 that allowed them to do so. That caused me then and causes me today considerable angst. And I wonder if the government is willing to do that to grandparents. What plans do you have for this system in terms of financing, and what kind of regulations will be made, and will the word temporary be bandied about some more? The government denied there was even a problem, and I remember the Minister of Community and Social Services being thankful that there was an appeal process. Big deal. That means the appeal process that took the families a year or 2 years, finding lawyers to do it pro bono because they had no money at all, and then in the end losing the case and simply stating that everybody has to go through this elongated legal process to get some funds to look after their grandchildren causes me nothing but pain. I want to also deal, in the time remaining, with Mr. Elman, the Provincial Advocate for Children and Youth. My colleague again from Caledon, Dufferin Caledon, spoke about his representations. And he was the one who first alerted me to the use of our children. And I think it's an important concept, because the children who are wards of the state are in fact our children. We have taken them, and it is our responsibility to do that which is right. He made a presentation that called for the government to apply to a lens of all decisions impacting Crown wards so that our children would be on how our children are to be treated. Elman recommended making the financial support these youth receive through extended care maintenance not count towards income when it comes to subsidized housing. There was a meeting just last week, I believe, in which a motion was put forward after Mr. Elman spoke. After he made that recommendation, my colleague Ms. DeNovo from Parkdale High Park put forward the motion in committee that would do precisely that, that the financial support these youth receive through extended care maintenance not count towards income when it comes to subsidized housing, so that they could receive subsidized housing and look after themselves once they were no longer wards of the states, once they had maxed out at 18 years of age, to give them a chance. These are children who have been through destitution, who have been through poverty, have been through neglect, who have been through sometimes abuse and sexual abuse, some of whom have lived on the street. And Mr. Elman made a very simple request. The motion was put forward, and every single government member voted it down. Every single one. And I don't know why, but it causes me nothing but grief in terms of this bill. What is the plans of this government? What are they doing? They say they want to help those who are 16 or 17 to get back into the system, and I believe they probably do. It's only normal and natural that a child who has gone through some of these troubles in their lives will find that, you know, they rebel, they run away, they don't want to be part of it. And it's only normal or natural that after a few weeks or days or months on the streets, a few times living in shelters, living, you know, in some friend's basement on a couch, find out that they're not going to make it. They come back and they want to work with the system. I agree wholeheartedly with this provision of the bill, that it allows the Children's Aid to say, yes, come back and we'll help you. You're not yet 18 years of age. If you come back and do our bidding, then we will, in fact, support you up until the time you're 21. I want these children to have an opportunity. I want them to get an education. I want them to have a job. I want them to have all of that. But it is also at the same time very, very difficult with the conditions that are the body of this bill, because if the children's aid will put the conditions that the child may not or cannot live up to, they will find themselves on the outside looking in. I am mindful of the time. I have a few more minutes, but if it is time, I can finish on another day, Madam Speaker.
Thank you.